And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's harder to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the Hurling Show. Conal and Mike here with me here as usual on a Thursday. But joining the show today is our brand new voice. It's Paddy Stapleton. Paddy, how's it going?
Not too bad there, Colin. Yeah, nice to be joining me.
You retired there just before Christmas, Paddy. You're only 31. Tipperary, you know, they're in a really good place. Was that a difficult decision for you?
Yeah, it was really difficult. I suppose you give so many years when you have ups and downs, and I think going forward, I think Tip probably have the strongest panel they've had, you know, skill-wise, physically-wise, and mentally-wise. So it is, but I suppose when you're there a good long time, and like a lot of players over their 30s, the injuries start to mount up, and it's not really, you know, if you're fit enough for that. It's if you can train at the high level, or are you missing too much time, and then you can't get your rhythm going, you can't be as sharp as you want to be, which at club level it mightn't be as difficult to do, but definitely at county level you need to be training a large percentage of the time. And to be honest, the last 2 years I haven't been, so like it'll be very, very unfair of me to be on the panel ahead of a younger player who's chomping at the bit, and I'm not able to train. So I suppose, you know, it was probably the best decision for all, really.
I think injuries are really what kind of ends careers more than anything else.
Well, usually, yeah, I suppose. Or fear of injuries perhaps could be a factor as well, couldn't it? They want to prolong career, yeah. Play club for a few years. They don't want to end up doing, you know, irrevocable damage to themselves playing intercounty and then, you know, taking away what might be an enjoyable 7, 8, 9 years of club play, isn't it?
I myself, even about that, like, I mean, I found the injuries, it was just so frustrating. You think you're getting ahead of steam, and then next minute, right, as Colin said, a little knock there and you're gone for another week. And I remember in my early to mid-20s, you know, I had some fairly, you know, disc problems and stuff like that, but you were still able to train every night, and maybe that's why you're suffering now. But like, I was able to hop off it, and oh, you'd be sore and you'd be wrecked, but you'd be up training the Tuesday after a match, and you would be too bad, like, you know, you'd be sore but you get through the session. But then as it goes on, you're just kind of, it's mental, I found, more than anything else, that it's just getting drained. And this year now, you know, touch wood, I've been with the club for the last month and a half, and absolutely, you know, more or less perfect, and it's so much more enjoyable, and you'd actually nearly be more hungry for it, because, you know, you're kind of ready for the matches coming up, and you can really enjoy them, where it was getting to an unenjoyable state, like.
Yeah, it's actually weird attitudes of managers when you're injured. I've pretended I wasn't injured when I was, just because I didn't want, oh geez, he's injured again, like, you know. And you have other lads down on the panel that might actually say they're injured when they're not injured, and there's an awful weird dynamic that goes on between players.
A lot of times when I was playing through my career, and I think a lot of lads playing through their career, you play with those niggles, you play with those little injuries, you don't say anything about it, because it's sure, if you put your hand up every time you get a little knocker, you'll never be able to play it. And a lot of times lads are playing through even though they're not 100%, and then, you know, you hear on the flip side of that with the soccer lads, where they get any little niggle at all, they're gone.
But are they right in doing that? I know, like, I mean, are you doing more damage by playing when you're injured? I think soccer lads are gone completely mental. Like, if they feel the slightest niggle, I suppose they're professional athletes and they're worth a lot of money. So, like, you know, them playing through it, if they're found out to be playing through it, they're doing the club a disservice. I don't know, but
yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think now in the current game, like, when I started playing club, and I'd say Conal was the same, like back in the early 2000s, we were on so far in how hard we trained, but like there was no one there, S&C coach, to say, well, actually you have to pull back, or okay, we'll train hard tonight, but you actually need to do a recovery session tomorrow. It was balls to the wall all the time. Whereas now I'd really love to be growing up and doing the development squads that they're doing now in counties, where okay, you'll do the hard training, you'll optimise your muscle and you'll optimise your cardio and everything else, but there is somebody pulling, well, it should be anyway, somebody pulling you back and making sure, okay, right, there's a red light over that guy tonight or a red light over somebody else, and you're pulling lads back. Whereas I think when Clare started training really hard, every other, even club teams started to go crazy training, and then, but you didn't have somebody just pulling you back. So I think it's changing a little bit at the same time.
That's interesting, and that perspective, because you hear a lot now about development squads and playing Fitzgibbon, playing under 21, you're hearing about lads, you know, burnout, etc., you know, hip injuries and stuff. But it's interesting, if there is a joined up thinking on that, you can actually, as Paddy says, you can be doing the right kind of training at the right times, and if all the managers are communicating, then arguably you should be in a better state than, you know, Gerlach Nan's team of the 90s who were slogging up and down dunes, you know, twice a weekend. You know, it should be more sensible now if everybody's talking to each other.
Yeah, well, the science is there. But Paddy, you were writing a piece for AIB, because it's on the same topic as this, and you're saying that inter-county hurling and club hurling, they don't mix. And you made a lot of sense in that you can't go from a big loss at inter-county level and expect to be on the same wavelength as your club mates who are playing the following sometimes it's Thursday night. Like, I mean, look at the Dublin footballers this year. I know it was a replay at All-Ireland, but it was very harsh on them. But you propose some championship structures of your own, and just wondering why this championship structures debate doesn't really happen as much in hurling. It seems to be a football issue, whereas the same issues are happening to hurlers all over the country.
I don't know. I suppose maybe it's the amount of people that play football maybe is a good bit greater in Ireland, and every county nearly is mad about it. Even if a county isn't good, particularly great at football, it's their number one sport in a lot of places. So maybe there's more talk about it there. Like, I mean, from a hurling point of view, like, we still, you know, we're probably in the very, very same boat. You know, there's still massive delays. Like, if, I know a lot of lads, if they go in at J1, might even not miss a match. They might miss one match or two matches. And it's crazy to think that you're training for 3 months without a purpose. Like, it wouldn't happen anywhere else, and it shouldn't happen anywhere else. So like, something has to be shaken up. And look, I suppose at the end of the day, the GAA even know that. Like, it's a crazy system, and they know it. But I suppose you have to marry up the fact that there's school competitions, there's club competitions, there's county competitions, and then, let's be honest, there's the media obligations as well, and they've, you know, they have a say in it, because they're providing some of the income for the GAA. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, that look, just do away with that. I mean, the GAA obviously needs the money coming in, but there has to be some happy medium, you know, because I think it's actually doing a lot of harm to both codes.
Yeah, Conal, what do you think? Like, play your inter-county, end that, then start your club, instead of trying, you know, the old way was the 14-day rule and try and do both, but both teams are on different stages of their season, and it's very hard to do that now. It's so scientific.
Yeah, it is very difficult, and mentally it's hard sometimes too. You're going from a really, really professional setup, would say, with your county, and everything is geared around, you know, the big games, to go and play in maybe a league game. It could be in the middle of nowhere in the lessons rain and nobody's watching, and
no, you know, physio there, maybe
no physio, yeah. No water, no nothing. Now, I know you could say, well, I'm going soft because you're used to those luxuries and get on with it, but
if you need a rub, for example, you know, your hamstrings are tight, you're going back to club level to a league game, and suddenly there's no one to give you a rope, where that's your routine, you know what I mean? It's a really difficult thing.
100%.
Like, at the end, near the end of the couple of years we were playing, it was getting to the stage where you were being told by the inter-county manager, okay, you're going back with your club now for a week, but if you need physio before the match, or you need strapping, go to our physio's house and get it done, and then go to him, because we don't trust your physios. We don't want you coming back injured, or we don't want you coming back with any niggles, because that's what's happening. People are going off their clubs, getting injured and coming back, and then you're sitting on the line for us, for the county team, if you like.
Yeah.
And you're no good.
Jesus,
so
if you can't trust Ballyboden physios,
I'm not saying it's Ballyboden.
Yeah. No, but you know what I mean, when the biggest club in Ireland, and if their physios, you know, aren't considered county staff, and then what chances a lad playing intermediate or junior hurling down the country?
I wasn't specifically saying my own club.
I know, in general,
that's what it was happening. But I think on Paddy's other note there, with the inter-county and versus the club, like, this is my first real season of seeing as a club player. Like, last year, obviously I retired, and we went through with the football. We were on the go until Paddy's day. But I just couldn't, I still can't get my head around the fact that both senior teams, in specifically my own club, are going back training unbelievably hard in the first week of January. So 4 or 5 nights a week we're training really hard, doing the gym sessions, doing everything. And yet, in my eyes, there's only going to be one important game in hurling and one important game in football between now and possibly October.
Yeah.
And people are going to say there's 2 rounds of the league, there's probably going to be a round robin in the hurling, but you only need to win one game and you're through. Like, I just can't figure out why lads are training so hard, and then over the summer there's going to be about 5, 6, 8 week break where lads are gone off on holidays and doing whatever, and you're back to square one again, so everyone's trying to jam it back in and do all the hard training again.
Yeah,
I just don't understand it.
Yeah, no, and Croke Park, I see today that they're starting up this club fixtures committee. And they're going to take a look at every individual county and do an audit on them and see what they're doing. But like, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's a complete waste of time because there's not space in the year for it. Like, I mean, you look at Paddy, your county, Tipperary, it's one of the worst examples, and Dublin, who are strong dual counties, a lot of clubs. Mm-hmm. And like, there's just not the space. The inter-county season goes on too long. And I saw in your proposal, you finish up the inter-county season in mid-July. I personally think that might be a little bit too early, but like, you really do need something drastic like that. But Croke Park don't want they don't want nothing to do with this. Their answer is 2 weeks. Bring the All-Ireland finals forward 2 weeks.
And the committee.
Two weeks doesn't fix
anything. Bring it forward 2 weeks. Bring forward 2 weeks, but take up the 2 weeks that you could have used during the season with the Super 8 quarter finals, so they're not really proposing the same amount of weeks you'll actually get for Club Hurling.
Yeah. My theory on the reason Hurling doesn't get the same bad press as football is because the football championship starts off with mismatches after mismatches after mismatches. Yeah. At least the Hurling has the preliminary round in Leinster, so the mismatches don't necessarily happen in the main competition. You might have Laois and Offaly getting beaten, but Munster championship is very strong. Leinster have Wexford, Galway, Kilkenny. So across the whole summer, we are, you know, 80% of the time seeing the best counties play the best counties. So there's not the same uproar about the Hurling Championship as the football. But I remember talking to Richie Hogan before, and he, like, even despite all the All-Irelands he won under current structure, he says the gaps between the games, he said it ruins everything. You know, the 4 week gap between a Leinster final and an All-Ireland semi-final, it could be 5 weeks then before a final. And he's like, it should all be tightened up so you're playing more regularly.
To me, they want to shove it out as long as they can. You know, I suppose, you know, the GAA want to get as long as they can and build up momentum in the summer and have people going to every game, you know, and they spread all the games out. And I suppose, you know, Sky Sports and RTE probably want a full summer's calendar as well. Like, so that's what I'm saying, there's so much to think about. And we're saying, you know, they're saying that they're putting a little committee together about that, and I hope they do. But really, like, if you see what Brian Cody said, you know, I think he's completely right, and it's nice that the most prominent manager said it, that they need to take everything into account, bring it all together, and then a couple of things, as painful as it may be, might have to go, you know, to make a sport that's actually worth staying around for, that's worth devoting the time that is being put into it. Like,
no, I think he's bang on. I think that's the best way to condense the county championship a little bit more, which will in turn benefit, because look at the publicity and the advertising that they're doing now for the club hurling and club football, and there's huge support for that, and people want to go and see games. You know, people were surprised that, like, I think it was 16,000 or whatever went up to Cavan to watch Dublin and Cavan. But people are dying to get out and do things in the winter, so let's give them good quality games. And especially in the summer as well, be it club or inter-county, but definitely squash the season down a bit and give the club a bit more rope, because at the minute it's dying. And I really, all credit to club players, the amount of patience that they must have, you know, because you're told, oh, I think championship's going to be in April, and then all of a sudden 3 weeks out, oh no, that's pushed back, the county manager doesn't want it, so it's gone again for another month. And you're like,
welcome to the club. I'm glad you understand it now, because, like, I mean, I couldn't, everybody says it when they retire from inter-county, because you're so blinkered at inter-county level, you're concerned about that, and then when that's over you get all your games at club, so you're never held up and you never want to complain about it. And it's only literally, Paddy, you'll see it this year even more, that when you retire, the dog's life these poor club fellas have been living.
Taking you this on to bring the championship structure conversation into the Hurling podcast.
if you even knew, we won't be playing now for 8 weeks. Well, then, like, at least, well, number one, you could train to fit the purpose, and number two, you could actually enjoy your life, because you know you're going to get maybe 3 weeks off or 4 weeks off to go, and you could travel the continent in that time. But, like, you're really holding up people's actual lives, and we're kind of holding the love or the game over people more so than anything else. Like, you love the game, so you stay around and put up with this crap. Like,
they're holding that goodwill against it. And just before we move on from this, I'm glad, Mikey, you drew my attention. I could talk for an hour about this, giving out about it. But this is the thing, the argument that's often put up, and Paddy, you wanted the inter-county season finished halfway through July. Like, I mean, my idea maybe the end of August or the start of August. But they say, oh, we don't want to lose the inter-county season, then it's our competitors will, you know, or lose, you know, the spotlight to our competitors. But if club football in hurling went on through August and September, like, suddenly then the provincial club championships could be marketed and put live on TV on RTE and have a Sunday game of them, and suddenly not only do you have a huge inter-county end to a season, then in October we have another massive kind of club end to a season, and you could actually make this better rather than say, oh, but we're losing August. Yeah, but you're gaining a huge thing in October if you just do something about it, Conor.
Yeah, no, I think it sounds good, but whether they'll do that or not, I don't know. And I think the more games you give people, the better. People just want to go and see games. People want to go to the pubs and watch games, and I think it does. It nearly sometimes to the general person watching a match that's not in the GA or just interest sport, they're just interested in watching a game and watching it, something that's competitive and something that's exciting. And we're giving them that in the intercounty at the minute. And why not extend that all the way through from nearly February on, that there's a game every weekend and it's competitive and really good standard.
Yeah, let's move on to the games at the weekend, lads, because I want to focus on Clare and Kilkenny. Clare play Kilkenny in Cusick Park on Sunday at 2 o'clock. And Paddy, you were watching Clare. Like, we talked about Clare, we previewed the league, and there was a lot of talk. Keane Dillon was talking about hurling a bit more off the cuff. You know, what was the evidence on last Saturday night of what they're trying to do different, or was it clear after one game?
I think it was a little bit clearer, all right. They definitely weren't as rigid around the field. They definitely, you know, played their positions a lot more. I think the biggest evidence was they created a lot more goal chances than they usually do. Like, right. Clare, the last 2 years, they usually had Shane O'Donnell up front on his own. You know, he's like Shane Long against Germany or something, running across the 14-yard line trying to get on ball and nobody coming with him. But the last day, they must have 3 or 4 different goal chances. And you know, if Podge Collins got a penalty and actually should have been handed into him before that for probably an easy goal chance, like, if that penalty had gone in, they were only 2 points down, you know. So I think they are trying to change. I think it'll actually be a slow enough process because you're trying to, you know, hardwire something else into them that they've been looking at for maybe 4 or 5 years. So I think they will find it a little bit difficult, especially at the high level of intercounty. But it definitely was different the other day, but again, I do think it'll take time for him.
Yeah, it kind of take time, Conal, because, like, I mean, like Paddy said, it's 5 years of a pretty rigid structure with a sweeper, with kind of, you know, specific jobs, and that it's almost like now go out and play with freedom. Is it hard to rewire players' heads for things like that?
Yeah, I think it can be hard. You know, it, when you're in the county, you're in that bubble and you're being told what to do year after year, and you know, you're waiting for instructions nearly a lot of the times, and that seems to be the way it was. And they were heavily dependent on tactics and how they were going to, you know, form with the team before they went out, and you could see that's the way they were playing under Davey. And I suppose not only do they have a new system where they're kind of freed them up, there's a lot of things for them, probably, the players to get used to. They've a couple of new voices in the dressing room. They probably have, you know, new physios, new everything, and maybe they're changing where they're trained. So there's a lot to get used to, and I think it's going to be hard for them in the first game to try and change all that and make it right. I think they're probably saying, as management, they're saying, look, it's going to take time. You know, things aren't going to happen overnight, but like we're preparing, and what we want to do is get it right for later on in the year. There's going to be some hiccups along the way, and I think maybe the weekend maybe was that, but you know, they probably looked like they were kind of nearly well beaten, but as Paddy said, they had 3 or 4 goal opportunities. I think they maybe hit 11 or 12 wides, you know, just in about 40-45 minutes, so that's a lot in that, and I think they'll take the positives out of that going forward into the next day.
Right, okay. David really jumped out at me because Davey converted him into a midfielder, and I thought when I saw him back in the corner, I thought maybe he's playing as like a roving corner forward. But did they play orthodox, Paddy?
Yeah, they more or less played orthodox. Like, they always had two or three inside. They certainly hadn't what you usually have, men roaming off back the field. And actually, what it turned into then, I felt it was quite loose around the field. You know, I felt that the intensity wouldn't have been as high maybe as if it was one of the 4 semi-finalists from the All-Ireland last year. You know, in their matches, like, yeah. the Waterford and the Kilkenny's, the matches, there was a lot more pressure on. There was a little bit of a challenge match field at the time, so I think with Clare, they have to get used to the fact that they're going to be playing 6 forwards up, But they still, them forwards have to be fluid enough to come back and move and put pressure on around the field. And I think if you look at some of the Cork scores the other day, a lot of ball to lads into space, you know, which Cork are great at when you let them do it. But that's probably a reflection on maybe the hard work not going in up the field. So I think that's what they really have to get used to, because they have very good skillful players, but to be able to marry that with the work rate and, you know, the brains to shut down when you should shut guys down and the brains to leave them off when you shouldn't, I think that's a big challenge for them.
The deprogramming, you know, could take a while as well. You know, there are a good few years under Davey. You can't just, you know, you can't completely change the system of play that quickly, especially when you consider the likes of Reedy still playing for LIT. He's still playing under Davey in the Fitzgibbon Cup. They had a good win. A couple more, Shanahan, Oisin O'Brien. So there's a few lads who are still under Davey's tutelage there.
I think actually the defence, because Gerard Loughnane says they don't have any pace in the defence. And I mean, Jack Brown got roasted by Cadogan. In a defence that used to have a sweeper for 5 years, I suppose that's gone now, and that extra protection, I mean the rewiring needs to be done with the defenders maybe more than anybody is, and maybe the extra work rate to not allow that ball go into them so easy.
Yeah, well, watching the game, look, I'm not sure if he's right about the pace. I think they do have pace back there, but the fact that what Paddy was saying is they were left so, the fullback line were left so exposed, you know, the ball that was just being popped into Cadogan right in front, and he had 10 or 15 yards to run out to pick it up and round his man, and then there was nobody in behind.
Yeah.
So it'll take, look, that's just one of the things they'll probably learn from it, to try and bring the half back line a little bit back, because there is no one back there, only the full back line, and they can get exposed, and Cork are playing two up front, you know, so it's very difficult when there's so much space in there and you're popping lovely balls into someone like Cadogan that has pace. Very difficult to contain someone like that, but they just need to bring the half back line a little bit tighter, you know, and play a little bit more defensive, because it seemed to be you know, a little bit too open and free for all, and I suppose that's what they're trying to preach, but they also need to, as Paddy says, close it when they need to close it, and then attack when they do need to attack as well.
Yeah, because on paper, I suppose, like, you look at that forward line and you've John Conlon, Podge Collins, Cathal Malone, who I don't know much about, but you've Shanahan, Shane O'Donnell and David Reedy. Like, I mean, it's too good a forward line to be scoring 111. Now I know you have to put in the caveat that they had a lot of wides and a lot of goals, but for a new management, Paddy, like 111 in the first game, like, it definitely, we're not saying it's panic stations, we're not going down the Gerard Loughnane route, but like, no. I mean, it's still a pretty strong team they had out there, especially from midfield up.
Yeah, I think it was a strong enough team. Now McGrath coming into that forward line is a whole new ball game. He'd be fantastic in there, but like, I think though, Conlon looked sharp enough at times, so I think finding him a place is a big thing, because he's moved from full forward to corner forward, wing forward, centre forward. He's been playing every position the last few years. I'd love to see him on the wing, little room out there, and he's so strong, you know, playing against him. He's so strong in the air, he's so strong with the ball, and he's a good finisher, especially on his left side. That could be a plus from the other day. I thought Shanahan ran with a few balls, he's very, very physical. He needs to be involved, because I think one issue they have when you're playing that game is you might have to drive more 50-50 ball up, because you've only six backs, you don't have seven or eight back there where you're popping it through the hands and coming out, but you will have to send up a bit more 50-50, you know, 60-40 ball, and you need a couple of the big men up there winning the ball, but they're important enough for attacking. Like, if you put Tony Kelly into that as well, he's more of an attacker than anything else, and if you put him in amongst that, like, they're certainly capable of scoring more than 111. And remember, Podge Collins isn't back too long either. I mean, he's had a stint away, so I'd expect that to improve no end.
Yeah, I saw Gerry O'Connor speak afterwards about Anthony Nash's puckouts. He says, we struggled to get to grips with Nash's puckouts. I think he was excellent in terms of his puckouts, and we struggled to reset after them. What did he mean by that, Conal?
Well, I think if you watch Nash, you know, he's a little bit like Stephen Cluxton, as we were saying. You know, as soon as he thinks that ball is going over the bar or going wide, he's gone into the bag and got another ball, and he's ready to puck it straight away. So a lot of times, if you're hitting the ball over, you nearly admire it. You go, geez, that's lovely. I'm going to watch that all the way till it hits the net and then drops down, and I'm going to wait for everyone to say, well done to me. Then by the time you turn around and your own ball has hit the ground, Nash has the ball gone 30 or 40 metres the other side of the field, where his defenders know that ball's gone in the air, right, let's reset straight away, while you're thinking, that's a great score, I'm going to keep watching that one again. And all of a sudden the ball has gone down attack, and they have a point, and by the time you turn around, like, you're waiting for your own puck out then. So it's
there's a touch of the Coxon's to it, because he also, like, Coxon can just, there's no backlift, there's no run. Like, Nash is just, you know, there's no run up there. He's not, you know, tapping it and, you know, running past the umpire and drilling it. Like, he's just, from a standing start, he's just pinging 30, 40 yard real low trajectory passes. And you see the Cork midfield and the middle eight for Cork, they're all starting in the middle and they're bursting out. Kind of the same way Dublin do in the football. They start in the middle and they just kind of all burst out in different directions, and Nash knows exactly where he's going and they know where he's going, and that's incredibly hard to prepare for, especially if you're not setting your admiring your point going over the bar.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because Nash has such a booming puck out, Paddy, it's tempting to say get it down there as far as you can, but maybe Cork don't have those forwards to do it.
You know, even since Don Logue, I suppose, was the originator, and geez, certainly if we played Cork in the last few years, you'd have said Nash would hit anything. You know, he'd try for any ball, and he's very, very good at it. Great trajectory, keeps it hand height, and a man can move on to the ball. So what you need then, I suppose, is the players that can make the runs and can control the ball. So I think it's all something that's been there, and like it's kind of say you have a booming puck out, but like I love playing against a goalkeeper that all he wants to do is hit it down his line, because your whole back line can condense in. You've absolutely no space for their forward line. That's the dream, to be honest. Even if I went down to the 14, it's probably the dream, because really? Everybody is sitting in there. Forward can't get away from anything, and it's perfect. But he's, you know, as Colin is saying, like Cluxton, he'll wait for the move and he'll zip it in front of him. And now, if you're a clear forward in that situation, you're probably the most important player. If you're sitting back, you're cutting off a lot of avenues. And I think the next day, maybe, you know, they'll be under a bit more pressure in the puck outs.
Yeah, how much work would you have done on puckouts last year, for example? Like, I mean, it dominates analysis with football. I wonder how much stock teams put in if you don't have a Nash that's so good at it, for example.
Well, I think you've put a bit of work into it. But in football, I think it's less random. Hurling, you know, that ball goes out. There's only a certain amount of ways you can hit it out, a certain amount of formations. And at that stage then, when the ball's hit out, first two go for the primary ball and it'll hit the ground more than likely 9 times out of 10, and it's who wants it most. So it's really, you know, it is hard. I just think it's important to have variety on the puck outs. I know, like, and do you know what the biggest danger is? Probably if your keeper has a long puck out and the first couple come off, they're going to keep going to it and the defence have actually seen it. So probably more important on the field that the players and the goalkeeper sees what's working, what's not working, and is able to change it up.
Often teams are playing sweepers now, so you have that easy short one. Yeah. It's actually gas in hurling, because like a short puck out could go to Paddy because he's the spare man, and then Paddy will drive it along, which the goalkeeper could have done. I'm not saying you specifically, Paddy, but a quarter, you know,
someone it's happened.
Someone playing quarterback. But Cole, like, I mean, is it as big a science in hurling as it is in football? Or
I know from even playing club, that's now at the minute, and when we played inter-county, yeah, it was huge. It was a huge part of it. You wanted to maintain possession all the time. And my own thoughts on it, like, okay, go short if it's absolutely 100% on. If the corner, if the other team are playing a sweeper and he's gone out in the middle and your cornerback is absolutely free, and maybe a lot of times not a cornerback, because they're the lads that nearly you don't want the ball because they wouldn't be able to strike at the 60 or 70 yards nearly. But, and a lot of times, if the keeper isn't good enough to give you that ball to your hand, the last thing you want to be doing in a big game is getting one of those dribbly ones that just bounce right in front of you and you're wondering, uh-oh, here we go. And if you don't miscontrol it, yeah. If you miscontrol that, the forwards are on top of you, and then everyone's on your case. So I would be always an advocate of just get it out of there and get it down as far as you can.
Right.
But you need to have good ball winners up front, and a lot of times you'd work on, you know, okay, win your own possession. And if that wasn't working, you try and do something where a wing forward and a centre forward would both go to the one side, and you'd leave, say, someone else on the other side, and that would be your 70% chance of winning the ball. Also letting the midfielder, a good midfielder that it's going to pick up the ball off the breaks running through, so there's a good chance if you're not going to win it in the air, when you're going to break it forward, you're not going to let it go behind. So a lot of talk like that, so maybe it was just us, but I think a lot of teams are working on puckouts, and a lot of detail behind the scenes of how you can actually hold on to possession and bring it up to the forwards and get a score.
That's interesting though, that what Paddy said about that he loves that long puckout, because like, I mean, you've played in the forwards and you've played in the backs. Have you noticed that, say, if you're playing against Tipperary and it comes in long, that they'll all kind of gather in around it and make leave no space for you.
Yeah, well, the last year I played in the backs, and I used to love a lovely high ball down, so I could either go and catch it or I could just slash like hell and not worry about it. But when we played Cork in the league down in Nolan Park, I was marking Lahan, and he was running everywhere. It was hard enough to keep an eye on him. So any time he'd make a run for the puck out, Nash was hitting him with a ball like perfectly head height. So it was impossible for me, even if I was like 1 yard behind him, impossible for me to get a touch on that ball, because it was out in front of Nash, or out in front of Lahan, and he was catching it, and I couldn't do anything unless I was going to foul him or come on top of his head. It was just, I couldn't believe, for the distance that, you know, Lahan was away, he would have been about maybe 60, 70 metres away, but yet he was pinning it into his hand, into space. It was a dream for Lahan to get a ball like that. And I think they work on things like that. They don't just lump the ball down, because it's easy for a defender, as Paddy said, just put the hurl up, and 9 times out of 10 it'll just break to the ground. But if you can get a keeper to give it to your hand, it's a huge advantage, and there's not too many keepers around that can do that, even to a cornerback.
Who else is good at it? Nash is obviously the best. He's the closest thing to the Don Lug Cusacks, to the Clucks, you know what I mean? I keep bringing football references in here, Paddy, but who any other county goalkeepers that are really good at hitting men like that?
Well, I suppose Darren Gleeson with Tip would have been very good. I suppose a couple of years ago he gave a fair exhibition against Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final there, and he's fantastic. But I think we've moved away a little bit from it, and more facing up to the longer ball than that. And I think actually, Owen Murphy, Kilkenny don't play that style, but like Owen Murphy seems to be able to do everything. I know he's played outfield a lot. He won a Fitzgibbon as an outfielder at WIT. Like, he is absolutely on fire, and I'm sure if Kilkenny may have to change tactic at some stage in the next few years, and I think he'd be fantastic to do it as well.
Yeah, okay, that's all really interesting. Maybe like some of these goalkeepers are good at it. Michael, sounds like Michael Ryan went away from those short puckouts then and just get it on down long. Michael Ryan sounds like kind of a lot of old school values, Paddy, does he?
Certainly old school values. Like, he's very, very up to date. Absolutely no fool anyway, with modern hurling. But certainly marries the upfront values, and I suppose he's not trying to pick any cute ways around things. He's not trying to pick locks and smoke screens here. It's the person with the best attitude will be on the field. And that's the way it is, and he trusts lads for that. So, like, there is, there's work around puckouts, but it's mostly getting it into the areas that you want. It's very, it wouldn't be on the lines of, an NFL player or anything like that. It's get down into the right area, and then, whoever wants the ball most will probably win it.
Yeah, you love that hurling too, Conal. That's exactly what you like. Get it down as far as possible. Come here, I want to talk to you about Dublin, Conal, because obviously that was a disastrous result, and we touched on it on Monday. About Ger Cunningham's comments afterwards, where he seemed to deflect kind of blame away from himself onto his players. Like, he said, it's okay for us on the sideline to be saying it is or it isn't, that's good enough. It's about expectations of themselves, it's about what they expect of themselves. I just thought, he picked three minors against the reigning Ireland champions, two other debutants. Like, I thought it was harsh to actually put a bit of blame on the lads on the field when he was the one that picked a very inexperienced team to go out against the likes of Tipperary.
Yeah, I've seen those comments. Very strange, like, to come out with something like that. You'd always have thought that the manager would back up the players no matter what happened, and regardless of what he says in the dressing room. When you come out to the media, you say, oh well, it didn't work for us today, it was my fault, I took a chance on whatever, blah blah blah. Look, I'm hesitant to be critical of them. It's one game. I've often been there before, and we've got an absolute hiding in the first league game. But like, the best thing about the league is you're back again in 6 or 7 days later, and it could be a totally different story. So I'm really just holding judgment and hoping that the next day you'll probably really see the best of these lads. Because to be fair, for the young lads that are picked, okay, they're picked because we all know the circumstances behind it, but I think there's a lot for them to get used to. Being even among a team on a big day is a lot to get used to. Even the small things like meeting a little bit earlier, getting the bus to Croke Park, a lot of them players the first time playing in Croke Park even, and I think it's very hard. It's very easy to be critical of them now and the other lads. And I'm not going to do that because I think let's give them a chance. And it took me a while to get used to inter-county scene. So we're not going to be slating anyone in after one game. And a lot of those young lads played actually very well. Just I suppose the last maybe 15-20 minutes of the game was a dead rubber. It was gone at that stage. But they still kept fighting. And I think this weekend is a great chance. Look, the pressure's off. Nobody expects anything from Dublin this weekend. Everyone's expecting, oh well, you know, Dublin are in transition, let's see how much they're going to get beaten by. But like, that's the best time. And I always felt that when people were throwing these things at when I was involved in the camp, we used to use those to drive us on a lot more. And it's always surprising when you expect nothing from a Dublin team, especially in the hurling, they'll give you so much. And it's the nearly the way around. When you're expecting things, they don't. So let's give them a chance in the weekend, and hopefully they can show exactly how good I know they are, and everyone in Dublin knows they are.
Yeah, but you mentioned there, Conal, about Dublin in transition, and they are in transition. But why are they in transition? Because, like, I mean, they won a Leinster in 2013, and that team has been disbanded because the manager chose to disband it. And a lot of older players are gone, and you see these young minors, and they're coming in, and they're really good players. Wouldn't it be great if you had some of the older lads and mix these lads in with them, and suddenly you have a beautiful mix then, rather than completely gut out what you had and start again? Like, I mean, I don't think Dublin were at the stage where they needed that gutting and starting from scratch. It's almost like, you know, there wasn't the need for that.
No, there probably wasn't. I think probably a lot of people would agree that that's not the way to do it, but it's not the way this management team wanted to do it. This management team wanted to do what they did, and they're seeing what's the results now. It's no secret that he wanted to make changes. He made his changes, and again, look, I don't want to be coming across any critical. It's easy to criticise players. It's easy to criticise management. Now, let's see how the league goes, and then we can make a proper judgment on it. But look, it's there is lads missing, obviously. Look, and I think to Dublin to be anyway successful, whether we were in maybe 2011, 2013, or whatever it is, Dublin need absolutely every single person that can even anyway chance of playing inter-county on that squad. And that's you need to pick your best team. You're not going to, I don't think we're in a situation where we can be like a Kenny and Tip, only pick a select few and say, right, let's go with these and that we'll win something. Dublin need absolutely everybody singing on the one sheet and pulling together, and that's how you can be successful and believing in the cause. And look, we'll see how things go this weekend.
Can that happen this year, do you think?
Can that happen this year?
Yeah.
Well, at the minute, it seems to be the management team have picked their squad, and that's what they're going with for the year. So look, it could be a great season yet. These lads could really blossom when they get a chance. But we'll have to wait and see how that goes. And I hope it's this weekend we see what they're really made of. You know,
well, Paddy, what's your opinion on Dublin looking in from the outside? Like, I mean, we had Michael Carton coming out at the end of last year saying there's a toxic atmosphere amongst some of the management team, don't even speak to each other. And then we talked to Paul Shute on the show here before Christmas, and he said that, you know, Michael got burned by the management, and, you know, that's his opinion. I'm not of the same opinion. And Liam Rush often defends them. So, like, it's hard to know exactly what to believe.
Very hard. And, geez, I suppose, same as Cornel and yourself, when you're in an inter-county situation, the amount of rumours you hear is absolutely crazy. You know, you wouldn't get it in a novel. So, anything, you know, can be made real that hasn't been real. But, like, the take is, like, they're missing, you know, Sutcliffe is one of the best hurlers in Ireland. He'd be the main man in any forward line in Ireland. Michael Carton, you know, has been a great wing back for 3 or 4 years. When he played there, he was really at the top of his game. Peter Kelly, I always thought he was fantastic. Like, he was one of the backs that I'd say, you know, our forwards will have a tough time. And then Paul Ryan isn't playing either. So there you have four cornerstones of your panel for a long number of years not there. And, like, it seems to be a bit of a clash of opinion or a clash of beliefs, and some will stand for it and some won't, you know. And I think it's just very, very sad that they're not playing, because Dublin have been a really, really hard team to beat for, you know, since the start of Anthony Daly's tenure there. And it's quite sad it's come in. And, like, I looked at the team before the Tipperary match the last day, and honestly, only six of the players were household names. Now, that's fine in a tournament matches that they play, maybe the Walsh Cup, But like, this is getting to the league, and the league has gone quite serious, where teams need to win a couple of matches to make sure they're staying up, and teams are only playing maybe three or four newcomers, because they want to mix them in. But when you have only six lads that, you know, and I'd be having a fair eye on it now, and one of them is the keeper that you recognise, that's alarm signals, and you're starting off the team on a very uneven footing there, that they're all trying to make their place, and they're obviously trying to win a match, but at the same time, like when you're going for a trial match when you're a young lad, if the thing starts to go wrong, you do try and mind your corner to say, well, look, you know, I had to do myself proud or whatever. So I think it's a little bit unfair, you know, as opposed to Tipperary. I think had possibly three or four lads who weren't in the team last year, and they're getting their chance with other players who are confident already, you know. So they have a lot more chance of expressing themselves and being in that team ethos. So I thought it was really, really hard on them the other night. And as Colin said, I really wouldn't be too hard on them yet. They need a bit of experience, hopefully, to get a bit of a win and get a bit of a boost.
You were part of the Tipperary squad when, like, if you want to describe, Michael Carton said it's toxic. Like, there was certainly a toxic atmosphere when Babs was over Tipperary in 2007. He started dropping legends, and there's some similarities behind it. You know, the manager's under pressure, doesn't like maybe some of the older lads that might be opinionated, so decides to drop them. And I think my personal opinion is, when it gets to that stage, the manager should just know that I'm done. You know what I mean? I've lost too many of the big personalities in the team. Cunningham's solution seems to be get rid of them all. Babs dropped some, like, two absolute Tipperary legends, you know, but yeah. The writing's nearly on the wall when that kind of stuff happens.
And well, it usually is. Like, I suppose the role of a manager, I would say, first and foremost, is get the best out of your players. And if they're nailed on starters with championship pedigree, you want them on the team and you want to be getting the best out of them. But I suppose, you know, if you drop players and you bring in new players, the new players aren't going to go against you because you give them the chance.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's like, if somebody started doing a match last week in the league, you're hardly going to say, God, he's a brutal manager, his training's brutal. They're going to say, no, I'm getting on grand with him, he gave me a chance, so I like him. So it's that's why it's a difficult situation, and you've seen it happen before in different counties. As you said, the writing is usually on the wall, but I mean, I don't know what's going on in there, but that many players not playing is, you know, a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, and even he changed all his backroom team as well, which is pretty unusual after 1 year as well. I can understand where Shute and Rush are coming from, Conal, because, like, I mean, they're not going to come out and say, you know, things aren't great in here. Like, they have to, when you're in a squad, you have to remain positive and you have to try and keep that atmosphere, you know, as best you can. So they're obviously going to come out and say things aren't as bad as what's been said. Are they as bad as what's been said?
Look, no player is going to come out when you're in a squad and say, yeah, this is a terrible situation. This, you know, this whole setup was terrible. Like, no one's ever going to say that. You have to put your shoulder to the wheel and drive on and always pick out the best things about it.
Yeah.
But I think there is. You could rattle them all off as you did. You know, you've Paul Ryan, Shane Durk and Darragh Plunkett, Johnny McCaffrey, Peter Kelly, Danny Sutliff, Joey Boland would all probably get on the team tomorrow if you're picking a team, like, and there's probably five or six others that I haven't even thought about there. But look,
how frustrating is that? You're a Dublin fan now, you're an ex-player. How frustrating is it for Dublin hurling to be put back into this transition phase when you don't necessarily need to be there?
It is hugely frustrating to be watching it, but, you know, I'm not going to be, I think I've said a couple of things before and they get blown out of proportion. I'm not going to make a huge statement. I'm not going to be hugely critical of them. Let's see how the next couple of games go, and then we'll make an assessment on it, because I think after one game, you know, I think a lot of lads have been saying this is coming down the line since October, since we've heard about this, and these games are going to be really difficult for Dublin. But look, let's see what happens. You know, maybe he'll get a reaction the weekend that could turn all this on his head. You just never know, even though I'd be surprised, but you just never know. And then I think we'll make an assessment on it and we'll make a proper opinion on things then.
Okay, that'll do. Right, we'll leave it there. We'll be back in a second.
It's tough. I won't tell lies. There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you. But again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. It's a leash, man. But it's a long 6 years for us there. And we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was Tuesday morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze at his socks pulled up pretending to be TJ Reid, and fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
Yeah, Kildare's John Mulhall has joined us in the studio now. How does that sound, John? Kildare's John Mulhall.
I know, it's great to be playing with Kildare, to get the opportunity to go back hurling at my age, 28. Probably been away from it for about five years. So I finished up with Kilkenny when I was 23. So interesting to go back and just get back into training at that level. It's crazy the amount it's come on since even 5 years ago with Kilkenny, which you presume would be training hard even at the level Kildare are at now. It's even ahead of what I was doing 5 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
They've moved on that fast?
Moved on spectacularly between WhatsApps and, say, video analysis.
GPS trackers. They're not your friend.
No, not that far yet. But just in terms of pure science of the sport, it's moved on in the 5 years that I've been away.
Yeah. Was it a difficult decision to go to Kildare? Because I know you said you've been out of the game, and I saw a quote saying that you didn't think you'd ever play for Kilkenny again. But like, you're a Kilkenny man, you've played underage, you've played senior, you've played in All-Ireland finals. Is it difficult to put on a different jersey at intercounty level?
Well, I would have spoke with a couple of people at home when Joe rang me, and I would have, like, they would have said, like, why would you do that? You've played in front of 82,000 on All-Ireland final day and stuff like that. And I was like, look, to get an opportunity like that, you don't want to be looking back in 6, 10 years, 20 years time and say you got an opportunity and you didn't take it. So I'm actually loving hurling with the boys, and hopefully we can go on and promote a hurling and win the Christine.
Yeah, when you've come into the Kildare setup now, because you've played in All-Ireland finals, you're immediately parachuted into a leadership role in a squad that you don't know that well. Is that a difficult dynamic?
No, like, I'm getting this opportunity, and like, I've been in a leadership role, maybe people might think that I've played at a high level and stuff like that. That maybe naturally you're in that zone, but I just want to go down and say, do my best for the boys, and like, if that natural leadership role comes, then it comes, but I won't be going out of my way to tell boys what to do or anything like that.
How are you settling in down there?
Ah, great, yeah, the lads are unreal, friendly, and say the banter is good old crack, so enjoying it immensely. And to bring Kildare hurling up to, say, there's issues with the championship, in my opinion, in relation to, say, going into a round robin, like, maybe, like, the other teams that are in that, there's no real benefit to them. Maybe they could come down to the Christy Ring, or maybe the winners of the Christy Ring should get an opportunity to come into the Leinster Championship.
Yeah.
Say that the championship is probably favoured, like, Offaly, say, Westmeath, Laois. They could all play in a Christy Ring Championship and be done with by June, and then come into the Leinster Championship.
Yeah.
Instead of all these teams, say, probably playing for a chance at Galway and getting bet by 10, 15 points, what is the point in that? So if all those teams were playing for silverware and then come into the championship under the banner of Christy Ring Champions, that would be hugely beneficial, I'd say.
Be more of a carrot. What do you think the standard is like? Because, you know, on the show here, we cover 1A and 1B a lot. You're the first look we've had, you know, at 2A. What kind of standard? You're coming from a high level of club standard and obviously a Kilkenny standard. How far below is that? Or, you know, are there really good players there? What level of hurling would you compare it to? At club level, for example.
Kildare would compete in the Kilkenny Championship very strongly. There's difference between county and club, but like, it's about raising the standards of all these counties. That I know they're doing work, and counties are doing huge work. Like in Naas, you have so many hurlers that it's absolutely crazy. They're coming down playing in the Kilkenny leagues under 16 and minor and wiping the floors with some teams, so in the A division. So like, just another, like Kildare in another few years, 5 years even, I could see them competing in Leinster Championships. And if you could get Westmeath and other teams of a similar ilk up to that standard, Carlow, then there's no reason why you couldn't have 10 teams competing for a Leinster Championship.
Yeah, maybe, or at least, like you said, get them into that round robin series, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, well, just like there's teams there, like you've Galway, Wexford, you know, Kilkenny, but then all the other teams, there's not a million miles apart from the whole lot of them. So if they had that nugget of played the Christy Rig, Leinsters and Munsters, you could have a chat about getting rid of them, but like those championships are there to stay, I'd say.
Yeah. Do you have any regrets about your Kilkenny career looking back now? You're only 28. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're an old man now, retired. But looking back now, do you have any regrets?
Not particularly, no. I was there from training from about the time I was 19 to about 23. And like when I was 19, it was 2008. And I was coming into an All-Ireland winning panel of three in a row, and lads had six All-Ireland medals at that stage. And to be even in there training with the likes of Tommy, JJ, like these men will never, Henry, all these lads, Martin Comfort, Owen Larkin, these lads will never be seen again as long as sport hurling is played. So, like, to come into that and to even play in the 2010 All-Ireland for five in a row, playing the 11 All-Ireland to come back and beat Tip, to be there in 9 and 12 as well, like I was on the greatest panel ever assembled.
Yeah.
So I can always look back on that.
So, like, you know, we talked about this at the top of the show, and you're talking at the level you were at, that you're breaking on and you're getting game time on Kilkenny's arguably their greatest ever team. It's the team going for five in a row. So, like, I mean, that'll show you the level that you were hurling at. You know, is there frustration there now with you? Because, like, I mean, the team isn't at that level now. So, like, you should really be able to walk onto that Kilkenny team now. If you're at that same level.
Yeah, well, potentially I could have done that. But, like, say, when I was dropped in 2012, I could have made a decision to either, like, go really hard at getting back onto it, or be happy with your lot and concentrate on living your life. Like, I don't understand where hurling and GA and football wants to go over the years. Like, it's becoming more and more outrageously hard training and hard work. That, like, where does the game want to go? You'll never get as good as hurlers as that era and other eras. Like, the only, if people keep training harder and harder and harder, where does the game go? You have to go professional, and that is an absolute disaster. That would be the death knell of, I think you might, I don't know, you have a different opinion, but like, it's the volunteers, the people on the ground, teachers, primary school teachers, that's where the money needs to be pumped into developing kids. Like, if you can't go out and enjoy the thing after an All-Ireland or during the year or stuff like that, what is the point of the, like, you either turn professional or you just stay the same, you know?
Yeah. I was reading that she said when you got the call off Cody, it was in 2012, that you were no longer part of the panel, and you were thinking, ah, look, that's all right, I'll head off to the Euros, sure, I'll get back on it next year. Little did you think at that time that that would be pretty much the end for you.
Yeah, well, sure, like, you get a call like that and you just take it as it is, like.
But you weren't overly concerned.
The call only lasted, you know, 30 seconds. You just get the call, you're out in the middle of a field farming. That's, you're just there with yourself. You're not doom and gloom, or you're not, you know, exhilarated. You know, you just get on with life, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be. I suppose maybe 2-3 years later down the line, there would have been days there, Kilkenny could be playing a match and you'd be like, oh, you could be there and you could be this, but like, you just move on with life. I don't know other way to explain it. You just get on with things.
Yeah, and you went away travelling, you've been to South America, Australia, New Zealand, all around the world. And would you completely separate yourself from the whole Kilkenny thing then, or would you, you know, just get away, completely live your life in a different way, or would you be checking up on what's going on?
No, I think from Armagh, Corner Forward, jeez, I can't think of his name,
Jamie Clark,
I read it there the other day that he said he was always thinking of home, even when he was in New York and all this. Like, when I'd be away, I'd be always looking at, Kilkenny GAA to see who played what under 14 matches on, or, you know, like,
really,
like, to you, that people are cutting themselves when they say they go away and they come back and say, oh, I just completely disengaged from Ireland and this and that. That's complete nor nonsense. People go over there, and when you're away, you're thinking of home, and when you're at home, you're thinking of being away and travelling, you know. So that's the way life is. Like, people come back and they try to make out travelling is this great thing where you, you know, you find yourself and this and that. That's not the way things are. You go away, you're away 2 weeks, and you're, you know, after coming out of a session, and then you're like, oh, I'll just go home and get the cooking after mother or something like that. So, like, you know, people try to sell these things as if they're great, but, like, travelling's brilliant and opens your mind to new cultures, and you're looking at, maybe you could be looking at a match in New York there saying during the summer, and you'd be like, what is the whole point of that? And then other days you'd be like, jeez, I'd love to be in the middle of it. You know? Yeah. So it just changes.
Yeah. Well, me and you are on the same level, definitely, on this whole finding yourself when you're away travelling. Like, I mean, I went away travelling and I enjoyed myself. I didn't need to find myself. I kind of knew who I was, but I don't know. Some people maybe need that, or kind of in a place in their lives where they need to find themselves. I can't relate to it, but I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, but like, we grew up playing GAA and sport, and, like, to have that in your life, the GAA offers so much to people. Like, and you talk to other cultures and countries, and are like from, say, Canada, and they don't have any sport. Either you make it in the sport at a top level, or you don't. They don't have actually any clubs where they can go play and play from 5 years of age to 45.
Just for fun.
For fun. Like, you either make it as a top athlete or you don't make it at all. So it's absolutely crazy when you see these people, they see these games and they're like, geez, what is this? Like, how do you do it? Like, and we're very lucky to have it. And to say, to take someone away from that country and that we grew up with that, and to say that you're going to, like, oh, you hate the GAA, or you hate this, or, you know, like, that's just complete nonsense.
Talk to me about your relationship with Brian Cody, because I saw a quote where you said your relationship with him differed from other people, that you weren't afraid of him.
No, but, like, if you look at it from the sense of, he's there 19 years now, so someone of 19 years of age going in to Brian Cody now on the panel, he would probably be like a demigod in terms of, like, they've grown up every day of their lives, and Brian Cody's been the top man. Like, you'd be in such awe, it would be crazy that you would never even think of, you know, speaking or saying anything to him, nearly. It's that kind of level. So, like, I didn't have me and Brian are, like, we're great. We had a great relationship and good banter, and that was always it. That there was no issue. I'd just be myself in front of him. Some people maybe can't do that. That they'd be might be afraid of him or something. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but yeah.
But he's not, like, he has a light side, you know, behind the TV cameras.
Yeah, unbelievable light side. It's just, like, Marty Morrissey and a few other people have felt the wrong side of that.
Yeah, and he has that reputation. But he has this reputation of being so fearsome, though. That has to come from somewhere.
I think it's just his presence from, I don't know, just the man that he is, and from being a school teacher over all the years and having that presence. It's just his presence, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about this song that you sang, because this was getting blamed for you leaving Kilkenny, but you actually think it's nothing to do with the song, or do you think in a way it has? Because we talked about it at the top of the show as well. You sang this song in the homecoming 2011, and at the end it was like classic, like, it was funny, and Cody was in the stitches laughing. You see it on the video. And then at the end you say Tipperary Pogue Mahone and Liam McCarthy's coming fucking home, and Cody's face changed a little bit, and then he said, you've just heard a song from someone who's going to have a very short intercounty career, or something like that. Do you think that was in his head? Do you think that was the beginning of the end for you? It would be very harsh if that was the case.
I know. Like, intercounty hurling, like, I came back to, say, to January of that year training, and, like, got into it, and back in the league, I was getting, like, say, 10 minutes at the end of every match, and I was coming on, like, maybe there was pressure in my own head from that song, or maybe something like that, or, you know, pressure to, I was on the panel maybe 2 years at that stage, coming on every game but not starting. And then there was people coming, like Buckley was coming, and so I would have started the league semi-final that year, scored a pint, thought I heard all right, and then I was like delighted. Now league final against Cork, be starting, and then Buckley was in half forward, and I was like, oh Jesus, you know, like I really thought I'd be in. So that was dead to the confidence. Then came on the league final, and obviously was dropped then after that, and I hadn't played well in any of the matches, but I was trying more myself, just trying to get on the ball. And when I got on the ball, then Eddie Brennan would have said that I was hard to hurl with, which annoyed me, because, you know, like, just, I was just hurling the way I felt the ball was coming to me. And, you know,
hard to hurl with, as in, like, you're not throwing it around enough.
Yeah, well, I think he said something in Damien Lawler's book there, Clash of Fire or something, that it was very hard to read the way he played, which was, you know, I thought nonsense, really. But
that could be a compliment in a way for defenders.
Yeah, I know, but, like, yeah, so then I was dropped, and that I just wasn't hurling well enough, and that was it.
Right, so it was purely down to form then. Did you notice the attitude of Cody changed the following year when you came back after that song, or?
I can't really remember, to be honest, it's so long ago. Yeah, but I don't think so, no.
Okay. So what are the ambitions now with Kildare? What, like, I mean, you're hoping to stay there for the foreseeable future until you retire, I suppose.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes, but, like, really, really to give a good effort on 2A this year. We got over the line against Armagh the weekend, but we've 4 games now that we're targeting, try to win them, and then obviously the Christy Ring, like, obviously down future down the line, that Kildare would be in the Leinster Championship. Those changes that I mentioned at the start of the programme there, in relation to, say, changing up the Christy Ring and making teams get into the Leinster Championship, would help that, and Kildare would have a greater chance of improving and coming along, because the young hurlers in Kildare are absolutely unbelievable coming through. A few young lads there playing that would make any, definitely beyond Kilkenny under 21 panels and teams. So the talent is there coming through.
Listen, thanks very much for dropping into us, and best of luck as a Lily White.
Oh, thank you.
After the match with you know, with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said it yesterday on the Marty squad, because yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here. Right?
All right, lads, accumulators. Some great games of the weekend, obviously. I'm going to give my ones first. I've gone for Waterford at home to beat Tipperary 6-5. Galway at home to beat Wexford 1-3. Kilkenny away to beat Clare 8-15. And Kildare to beat Westmeath. After talking to John Mulholland, they've got their five out-of-towners, and they're all good players. I'm going for that home win. That's around 11-1. Right, so reasonable enough odds I've gone for an accumulator.
Some this of is you, really annoying you
some
today,
of,
isn't
some
it?
Some of you people, right, I'll go for Conal, right, you can explain your ones first.
Well, you asked me how we're going to make a few quid, and I thought this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah, 50-1, Conal, so name out your accumulator.
I think there has to be a reaction in Dublin. I'm going to go over to Dublin win.
Straight away you've lost your tenor.
You can't go against your own county. I'll go with Kilkenny win. After the last day, I'd say they'd be hurting, and it's very rare that Kilkenny lose two in a row. I'll go with Tipperary again, even though maybe Dublin were maybe not the opposition they probably Tipperary would have liked it for the first game, but I think that's that Tipperary team are on a mission this year to really set a marker down, and they looked really, really impressive the last day in Croke Park, from the lads coming off the bench to everyone, and Pádraig Maher stood out ahead above everyone, and I think that they're on the road, and I think they'll win in the weekend. And lastly, I went with Wexford. I think this Davy factor is a huge thing, and again, he seems to be everywhere. Every time you open a paper or read about it, and even on the Sunday game, you always just be wondering, you know, how do they pick the games? And now Wexford are on all the talk because of Davy. And look, wouldn't it be great if Wexford did pull off a victory in Galway? It is a tough in Galway, but what I would say is Galway nearly are the best team to play after they won a big game or won comprehensively. They always seem to think that they're the best thing ever, and now is the time to hit them for Wexford, and it could just be the weekend.
Yeah, Salt Hill, actually, I've played there once in a league against Galway. It's a very hard place to go. There's always a strong wind going down towards the sea or away from the sea. Yeah, well, I didn't mind. It was the wind I found really difficult to get to grips with or whatever. But yeah, just back to this accumulator here. It's 50-1, so that's what you're going for. So
you
might put a euro on this. You're not going to waste too many people's money, Mikey. You can give us your ones. You've come in at 54-1. Like, this is where I need to pull the reins back in on the two of you. I'm going to start a rule that if you're not willing to bet on the bet that you pick, don't pick the bet.
Are you not giving us the money for this?
There's no money. You have to put your own money, and I want proof, because you're coming up with these mad cap accumulators that you're not even going to back, and then you've got poor GAR fans listening to this, or listeners, I won't call them fans, we'd only love to have a fan or two listeners, and they're losing money on the back of your accumulators because they hold you in such high esteem.
We'll wait and see.
Mikey, call out your one there. So
I need to see. I'm backing them so hard I can't even remember. I said Cork to win. I think that's fair enough. Sorry, Colin. Yeah. I think Cork gonna win. I have Laois to beat
Offaly. Yeah, evens.
Yeah, I think it's a decent bet. I think there'll be a response after Kerry, and Offaly seem to be as shambolic as usual. I've gone for Waterford 5-4. So we were talking about their rucking ability against Kilkenny. They're playing them in Walsh Park, which is a sodden enough pitch this time of year, so there'll be plenty of rucks, and I think Waterford will get the better Tipperary. And I've gone for a Galway Wexford draw, because same as Colonel, I think that Galway do tend to take the foot off after a big win, but I'm a Wexford man, so I can't be that bloody optimistic, so I said we're going to get a draw.
Yeah, the Galway Wexford draw isn't the worst bet in the world. It's 10-1, but when you throw it into an accumulator and you've Laois at evens, and it basically comes out to 54-1. So you two are basically going madcap long range bets. Paddy Stapleton has decided to go with the stingiest bet you'll ever come across, so his four results come out to 2-1. So so Paddy, talk us through your
phone. I only knew.
hopefully the benefits for me anyway. Cork to beat Dublin, because we played in Parky Ring a few times, and it's very, very hard place to go. And obviously Dublin after last week, now they could have a reaction, but should be Cork winning. The second one then I went for was Kilkenny to have a reaction against Clare.
Yeah.
I thought they worked hard last week. I thought they were a good bit more intense than the Clare Cork list, so I think they could smother them down there. I went for Galway. I know the Davy factor, and they looked pretty good last week, but I really think Galway should be, you know, one of the top two or three teams in the country, so there's no way they should be losing at home to Wexford. And then the last one, Limerick and Kerry, I just went to the south of them, but who knows, maybe Kerry will give it up to them, but yeah. Limerick win.
Limerick were 1-100 there, so you weren't beefing. You bet up there too much. So that all comes to 2-1. I'm putting your cagey bet down to, you know, debut nerves, Paddy. There, you want to get off to a good start.
I didn't know it was a competition.
Oh no! It's a competition, all right. Don't worry about that. 100%.
It's a weird one next week.
Just mention on that Wexford thing going away to Galway and this Davy factor. And we spoke to Laois Chin on Monday's show, and I said to Laois, "What is the one thing Davy has identified with Wexford that he wants to fix that he doesn't think you're up to?" And straight away, without even thinking, work rate. He says that's the 100% thing that he doesn't think think we're good enough, and that's working all over the field. Conal, is that a perception of yours from playing Wexford, that they might have a bit of scale and be a traditional county, but they're not putting in that kind of work rate that Kilkenny, for example, might?
Yeah, he's probably right to a degree, yeah. I would say they are really skillful hurlers, and they probably dropped the head a little bit early in games when they really shouldn't, you know, and that was always our thing, that getting top of them and they'd probably just die, you know. But I don't think you can go wrong with work rate, you know. Every team can work harder, you could say, and I think if this Wexford team are get fitter and they work a lot harder, it'll mean that they'll be able to show their skills and get the scores and play a lot more the brand of hurling that's really associated with Wexford, you know.
Yeah, I think that Paddy, the game's kind of changed a little bit since maybe, I don't know, 2011-12, where these half forward lines are working so hard now that without that you're really going nowhere.
Yeah, you are. I think even fitness-wise, if David can bring their fitness up, you can bring your work rate up. It's all very well saying, God, we need more work rate, but in order to, I think you have to be a lot fitter, and I think that could be a big onus on him this year. And I see Lee Kinn was even playing further up the field, I thought, in the last game. So, like, he'd really be able to bring that. He's absolutely, you know, fantastically fit, and he could bring that. But I suppose the other thing I'd look for him to fix is when you're playing, they seem to compete very well, and then could be a couple of errors that they'd be making that'd be very club-like, you know. I think that's where they could fix it as well, you know, and the work rate obviously, but definitely there's a lot of little errors going on that they can eradicate.
Yeah, no, definitely. Right, lads, listen, we're out of time there. We've probably gone a little bit over. Thanks very much, everybody. And I just want to mention the Hard Yards, lads. We mentioned it last week, our new rugby podcast. And it has Donica O'Callaghan, Kevin McLaughlin as pundits, Andy McGeady's presenting, and our very own Pat McCarry is there as well. That will be out on Monday. There is Six Nations this weekend, right?
Yeah, Sunday it'll be out.
Yeah, it'll be out Sunday. So, yeah, have a listen to that. Just search for the Hard Yards on any of the podcast apps and on SoundCloud and you get it there. And we'll be back on Monday with JJ and Damien after Brilliant Weekend's hurling. See you later.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.